It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Today is Tuesday, May 7th. Joining me in studio is a special guest. It's our buddy Devin from Local 2244 News. And, you know, it's funny because I've been watching a lot of the news lately. Because our station association with 2244 is strong, I've become pretty good friends with Sean Parker.
So I
came to the news for the weather, and now I'm staying at the news all the time. So Devin Bates is on right now. Lauren Maloney's going to come on the podcast at some point. So Devin, how are you, man?
I am great, and it's funny you mention that because every time I'm walking around Burlington in my Local 22, Local 44 jacket, for some reason, people assume I'm a weatherman.
Why is that?
I don't. And
do you have that look to you?
I don't. It might be for that same reason you just said, that a lot of people are tuning into the local news for the weather. So for some people who maybe don't even watch local news all that much, they might just associate it with weather. Like, I'll be like getting dinner, and they'll ask me like, "Oh, hey, what's it looking like for later today?" I'm like, "I don't know."
I don't know. Tweet at Sean M. Parker on Twitter
exactly.
If you want. So your role on the newscast, and you're on every night. You're on the 11 o'clock news, the 10 o'clock news, and the 11 o'clock news. So as I said, I've been watching a lot. So I've developed a number of questions for you about the news side of things. But what is your technical role called? Because we know that Lauren and Glenn, they sit at the anchor's desk, and then they throw it to you. Is that reporter? Is that the technical term?
Well, the technical term is multimedia journalist, but it usually just gets shortened to reporter because nobody wants to say multimedia journalist every time. So basically how my day will go is I'll go in around 3 o'clock, figure out, you know, what I'm going to do that day. Some days it's pretty much immediately obvious what I'm going to be covering that day. But then other days, you know, you're looking around a little bit. And so usually that's how that works. And I'm doing all the filming and stuff like that, too. So
you do your own shooting, your own editing.
And that's where the multimedia journalist part comes in, is because I'm handling the camera, I'm editing, and then I go in and track the story that I'm doing, go in the booth and, say all the lines for the stories. So it's really kind of been this process where I've had to learn a lot of different things because I went to Westfield State University in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I didn't go to a specific broadcasting program or anything. I was in I was a communications and English double major. So I had like that sort of writing and news background, but it wasn't one of those programs like you might see at like a Syracuse or something where you're going in and you're specifically training for that role. I kind of ended up finding myself an internship in that and then decided that's kind of what I want to go into. And then after college, I ended up having the opportunity to come up here. And so it was definitely a quick learning curve. But I like to think that after a little while, I kind of started to get the hang of it. And now I'm in a sort of groove.
So when Lauren and Glenn, when they throw it to you, you're in a different part of the set than they are. Are you in a totally separate room or is it next door, basically? Are you just right to the right of them?
Oh, same exact room. And so it's kind of you'll walk in a little bit before your story starts and then you'll go on, do your thing. And you're standing almost right next to the anchors. And with the camera angles and everything, obviously that's not how it looks. But
it looks like you're in a room with maroon paint with a bunch of TVs behind you. Are you actually there? Is there actually a bunch of TVs behind you?
Yep. Okay. And there's the studio. But then sometimes we have a newsroom shot, and I'm sure you've probably seen that too.
Yep.
So we'll switch it up and do that every now and then, depending on what the story is, if it really has kind of that, you know, hard news connection, or if it's something a little bit more feature-ish.
Do you like, let me just put, is news what you always wanted to do? It sounds like, kind of like me, it feels like, not that you backed into the profession, but that it wasn't necessarily the plan. Is news something that is your main interest, or do you like sports? Do you have another interest inside TV?
So I would say news, you're right. And in some sense, I kind of backed into it. So when I was in college, there was an internship fair, and one of the booths that were there was the local Springfield station down in Massachusetts.
Are you from Massachusetts originally?
So I was born in Pennsylvania. And once we talk a little bit about where my fanhood lies, it's all with Pennsylvania still.
Okay.
So I was born in Pennsylvania. I moved up to Massachusetts when I was only like 2 or 3 years old. So it would have been easy for me to jump over to the Boston side. But then I grew up in Massachusetts, and then I moved up to Vermont. Obviously, when I graduated college in 2018, and then I moved up here. But I ended up getting into news because I talked at this internship fair with the news director for one of the stations down there, and he basically said, you know, you sound like you would be kind of good at this. You want to come do an internship this summer and give it a shot? And
so, you have a deep voice.
Yeah. And so I did that. And even after the internship, I wasn't entirely sure if it's what I wanted to go into. But then I started applying to jobs and things like that. And, you know, the other areas I was interested in going is maybe writing for a paper or going into radio. And I can't even nowadays rule anything like that out in my future. But I think it just kind of worked out that I got a really nice starting gig up here, and I'm happy to have the opportunity. But no, going into news, definitely until the summer after my junior year of college, wasn't really something that I considered going into.
What kind of things have you gotten the opportunity to cover? Because what I've learned about this profession is I've gotten the opportunity to go to a lot of places, see a lot of things, meet a lot of people that I never would have had the opportunity otherwise. What have you gotten to do that stands out in the last year that you've been here?
So there was this one story that I did. Every now and then you get one where when you're talking to the people in it, you kind of lose track of the fact that you're making a story for news, and it becomes something that's really interesting and sort of personal in its own right. So what happened was, it was in, I believe, December. I was covering over in Glens Falls.
Yeah, Glens Falls.
Yeah. So actually, no, it was Schuyler Falls.
Okay.
A lot of falls towns around here. So I was over there, and there was this man, Alan Brockbank. He had suffered a heart attack, and the story was about how his wife, after he had the heart attack, immediately started CPR, and then the first responders got there, and they basically saved his life. And what it was, all the first responders that saved his life, they were all meeting at the fire station to meet him, because he wanted to meet the people who saved his life, because he hadn't obviously seen them when he was going through all that. And it was this really emotional moment where he was, like, sort of meeting these people for the first time, and he got on the stage and thanked his wife and handed her flowers and everything. And it was a really touching moment. And honestly, that's when I really love the profession that I'm in, is because you can take something like that, turn it into a story that does justice to the emotion of that experience for him. And it was just a really cool thing to be able to sort of share that story. And there's other things that stand out, too, that aren't necessarily nice stories like that, but they're just significant. And you know that when you're there, you have to make sure you're getting everything right. There was a helicopter crash in Beekmantown.
Yeah, and a couple months ago.
Yeah, this was not too long after I started working. And just being on the fly like that, when you get to something and you're not sure what to expect, I'm generally err on the side of like a somewhat nervous person about situations like that. Like, if I don't know what to expect, that kind of scares me a little bit. But I think being in news has sort of taken that away a little bit, where now I know when I get somewhere that I'm not sure what's going on, I have to do it. And it's sort of one of those things where I can just put all of that stuff aside and focus on my work. But I think situations like that are definitely the ones that stand out, where I can feel that what I'm doing is important work.
How do news people remain positive and upbeat? Because, and I'm going to ask this when Lauren Maloney comes on in a couple of weeks, top story, it feels like if the top story is not the weather, it feels like 80% of the time it's something that we would call negative. It's something sad. It's an accident here. It's a fire there. It's an arrest made here. It's somebody's wanted for something, criminal act there. How do you remain so positive when a lot of the things leading the news are inherently negative?
And you know what? That's a great point, because obviously, you know, before I got into news, there were things that were happening, crime in my area or fires or something, that you could go throughout the entire day and not think about that stuff is happening. But then once you work in news, that becomes your work to tell people about that. And I think how you stay positive is just kind of, when you're not at work, you try to take your mind off it as much as you can and just continue. That sports is a good one right there. You know, I'll get home, I'll watch all the highlights from the NBA games and stuff that day. And it really is never too hard for me to stay positive about things, because I think in this day and age, even if you're not in news, you're probably seeing a couple headlines a day at least that are negative. And so I think it's just part of this world we live in now, where we're always connected, that you're constantly being fed this bad news. And it's just how you choose to handle it that really makes a difference. It's like you can read the article and then think about it, or you can just kind of go about your day. And that's what I try to do. I try to kind of separate my work from my personal life and just be able to kind of get those few hours in a day to just relax.
How do news people also, this is a credit to you guys at your station specifically because I watch it, but I guess it's news people in general. I can't tell what you guys are emotionally invested in personally when you're on the air. And I think that's a skill. And I think that that's hard to do. Every night, well, not for most nights, there's some kind of political connection to the show. I couldn't tell which way your anchors lean right or left in their personal lives. They do a good job remaining unbiased. I can't tell which causes that you're talking about are something that are close to you personally. How do you guys, how do you remain so neutral and so balanced? Because I, as a viewer, I can't tell which way you guys actually feel as people. It's just the news and that's it.
Well, I think it's a dedication to the profession, right? I mean, if you have a personal opinion about something, you can't let that affect how you do your newscast. And I think it doesn't happen too often with me because I'm more or less just covering things that are going on in the community and things like that. But I think when it comes to being a journalist or a reporter, it's to just cover it right, almost right down the middle, but not in a way that makes it seem like cheesy that you're, you know, if there's something on one side that somebody says that makes a good point, then I usually counteract it with somebody on the other side of the argument. I've covered a lot of hearings at the State House and things like that, and you always have to include both sides of an argument. And that's really the core of that, is that, you know, and it almost brings into this other questions too, because there's a ton of different sound that you could take from both sides of an argument on a, you know, a hearing at the State House and which you choose and everything. So I think about all that really carefully when I'm putting together a story. And, you know, I do my best to represent the most people I feel is possible. But, you know, there's always going to be times when you'll cover something and somebody will reach out to you and say, hey, I don't really like how you did that. And it's one of those things where it's a learning experience and you can't let it get in your head too much. But, you know, you're always looking to try to cover things as unbiased as you can.
Big picture, what's the goal for you? Being someone who can use all the skills that you have to be a kind of multifaceted person, or do you want to be sitting behind the anchor desk?
I think maybe one day I would like to be behind the anchor desk. I just think that right now, a year into my reporting career, the whole process so far has just been kind of getting used to it and settling into that. And now that I'm kind of here, I can start to think a little bit more about, you know, where do I want my career to go? I would like to anchor someday, but at the same time, I would also someday like to try to get back into the sports world a little bit, because I think going back to that question you asked about how do you stay positive, I think in sports, it would be like thinking back to I had like a sports show at our college radio station. Those were some of the best times I ever had. And to be able to kind of go back to that environment where the stakes of what you're talking about just feel a little lighter, you can breathe a little easier, I would like to go back into that. But at the same time, I think, you know, being in broadcasting has its own rewards, and I do like that as well.
How often do you get frustrated by the following scenario, or how often does this happen to you? Because it happens to me. I'll be talking with someone. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be just a friend. It could be someone who I just meet as an acquaintance, and they'll come up and we'll talk about sports. And this doesn't come off arrogant, I hope, where I know more than them only because I'm following it, like something specifically. So if someone says, oh, man, I think Kyrie is going to leave this summer, and I say, well, he can make $80 million more by staying in Boston, so I think he's going to stay. Like, no, I know that. He can make $80 million more if he stays. And it frustrates me. Like, sometimes I'll just be like, all right, dude, whatever. Like, I know the answer here, but I'm just going to let you go. How often do you end up in real life where someone comes up to you and wants to talk to you? Man, I can't believe this guy did that. Well, no, I know the whole story, actually. It didn't actually go this way. All right, man, hey, you think what you want.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things, too, is you will get that sometimes. People will just hear blurbs of what's going on in the news. But I actually don't get walked up to that much or recognized necessarily in public that often.
This is going to change that.
Yeah. but I think it is interesting because you're only able, when you air your story, you have to find a way to compact everything that's happened in a particular thing to like a minute long story. And so sometimes that becomes a challenge, too, because to your point about people maybe not knowing the full scope of things or anything like that, I almost view that as that's my challenge when I'm putting it together, to try to pack as much information in there as I can. But as far as, you know, people sort of walking up and saying, hey, you know.
Like someone will come up to me and go, hey, man, the Yankees stink. And I'll be like, well, they got 13 players on the injured list. Now, they're awful. That Aaron Boone is terrible. Well, actually, they went to the ALCS last year in his first year, and he's one of, you know, a handful of managers in history to do that.
They come at you with the hot takes, and then you just kind of... It's like they have the hot take, and then you bring the argument out against it, but there's nothing that can defeat the way that they feel about that particular hot take. Nothing, no amount of logic you will throw at them will do anything for that take.
And what I tell people about this business is, and you were probably in the same boat as me growing up, is like, the best times of the school day for me were on the bus on the way in, the bus on the way home, and the cafeteria. And it was going to be me and four or five other buddies, and we were going to argue about sports. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what we do now every day on a professional level. The only difference is one, it goes 3 hours, and two, the final answer cannot just be because that's how I say it. It's like when you're 9 years old, it can be, no, the Patriots are better because I say so. Well, now we have to be able to prove that. But that's what I feel like, really, like a simple, like that's what this profession is for me. And that's why I love it, because it's exactly what I've been doing my whole life.
Yeah, and it would be a pretty dull radio show if everybody just said their opinion and was like, I'm not changing it. That's how it is. I won't back it up. Yeah.
But it is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. We're talking with Devin Bates, our buddy from Local 2244 News. If you want to be on the podcast, you can do what Devin did. Just message me, Brady at 1013thegame.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker. Just subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We do try to get these out as close to noon as possible on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And again, they're on our Facebook and social media channels as well, Facebook and Twitter. So just search for us, 101.3 The Game on Facebook, 101.3 The Game on Twitter. I guess my last question for you about news is, how do you take, you have an interview, you're interviewing, I don't know, a senator, somebody, a judge, whatever. I guess you probably wouldn't interview a judge too often, but you're interviewing somebody, and it's a deep story. It's a layered story. And you get a 30-second soundbite. Like, how do you pick? Because like, I love radio because we want to interview you for 4 minutes, we can. We want to interview you for 14 minutes, we can. And we can vet the story in any possible way that we want, and we can get out everything and let you decide what was important. I need 14 minutes with a guest sometimes to learn the whole story. How do you do it in 30 seconds? Or do you interview somebody for 14 minutes and then go out and pick 30 seconds of your own soundbite?
So usually what will happen is when I do my interview, one of the first questions I always ask, if it's something about an event that happened that day, just blanket statement, I'll say, what did you think about what happened? And that's a sort of way to ease me into the interview. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, kind of write questions up ahead of time. I kind of have an idea of what I want to ask them about going into it. But I think really what I kind of do is just try to throw them a small question and let them run with it. And a lot of times that ends up working because a lot of the people I interview are used to being interviewed. On the other hand, if you get somebody that you're interviewing that has never been interviewed on TV before, it can be a real challenge trying to get some meaningful information out of them. And not even just adults. You know, there's kids I've interviewed for stories before where it's like, you know, you're interviewing a 12-year-old kid and you want him to give you like a really detailed answer. So a lot of the times, look, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
But
I know that feeling too. I've interviewed high school kids that, and I've interviewed high school kids, college kids, and professionals that just aren't great interviews.
Yeah. And you could tell almost like halfway through, especially if it's a story where I kind of need them to be able to offer a little bit of insight on what's going on, then it can be a bit of a challenge. But usually I just try to follow a line of questioning that I think is going to end up leading me somewhere. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But I think being able to, you know, do a 6 or 7 minute interview is what it usually boils down to. Somewhere in there, there's something I can use. And usually I'll walk away from it either thinking, you know, I got to get more interviews because I'm not going to be able to use any of that. Or I walk away thinking, you know what, this story might almost be like good to go right now.
One of the things that I love, and I've said this on prior podcasts, I love booking guests. I love having guests on. I love bringing guests onto our show. And I love the process of interviewing, getting to learn about people and their perspective on things. One thing I don't like is going to press conferences. Mm-hmm. That is the one thing that I don't like. As far as getting interviews go, being in a press conference scenario is something I don't know that I don't do it well, but I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy that setting. I like having you one-on-one sitting down like this, or we're on the phone and we're talking. Mm-hmm. I like that better than being with 30 other people that want the same thing. Is it ever intimidating for you being in a press conference or being in a scenario where, hey, you've got a microphone, but so does Channel 5 and so does Channel 3, and you're all there competing for the same question?
Yeah, it's almost like one of those things where first you'll be like, oh, they stole my question. Now I got to think of a better question. And so it does kind of change the way that you do the interview. And thankfully, you know, day to day up here in Vermont, there aren't as many press conferences as if I was somewhere in a bigger market. But you still have them from time to time. And I think the whole format of a press conference is just it's really weird, isn't it? Whether you're talking about sports or news, just one person answering questions from a group of like 10 or 12 people just patiently like sitting down. It's just, it's kind of a weird format. And I think it changes the way that everybody sort of behaves in that scenario. Because obviously the person who's answering questions is very aware that everything they're doing is on camera, and the people asking the questions are trying to think about something that one of their colleagues didn't say. And so I think it's a really weird format.
I think the thing that I don't like about it and that I don't enjoy about it is that I truthfully feel like an outsider at press conferences. And the reason why is, like, I mean, I'll just use an example, UVM men's basketball. We are the flagship home for UVM men's basketball. We broadcast every game. We have a presence at most of the games. But when it comes to the day-to-day of being at practice, we're not there. And the reason why is because we're on the air. We're getting ready for the show. We don't have the manpower to go and dedicate one person to go to practice every day. So when we talk about a UVM basketball press conference, Lauren Walsh from your station, Jack Cordy from Channel 5, Mike McCune from Channel 3, like, those guys are always there. And they have a much, I don't know if it's a better relationship, but they're used to that setting, and the coaches are used to them being there, and the players are used to them being there. So when I go to a press conference, it's like, okay, we haven't seen this guy a lot this year. Like, it's different now. So you feel like an outsider. I think that's what I don't like about it. And I went to Giants training camp before, and it was the same thing. The guys who cover the Giants every day, players and coaches know them. The guy who's there one time, nobody knows that guy. It's a different scenario.
You almost feel like, oh, I wonder if they're like looking at me, like wondering who I am or anything.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. So I think that's what I dislike about it. If I was somebody who was a beat writer or a beat reporter and was there all the time, I think I'd probably excel in that field. But I'm not, so it always feels a little bit tougher. But you are a big sports guy. So when you say you're from Pennsylvania and your allegiances lie there, Pittsburgh or Philly?
So it's Philly. I'll give you a little bit of background on how that kind of developed. So when I was in elementary school and everything, I didn't really watch a ton of sports. I was never a big sports kid until middle school. And I think around the time that the Phillies won the World Series in 2008 is when I really started getting into sports.
So a good front runner. Good front runner story.
And so it kind of ended up working out that I just stayed with Philadelphia because I had family from Pennsylvania, and my dad is actually, you know, all Pittsburgh, so I ended up kind of going a different Pennsylvania route. But I came up to Massachusetts, and I kind of did the thing where, you know, I thought about maybe becoming a Boston sports fan.
You just wanted to be contrary to everyone.
Yeah, and that's, I think it was right around the time that all the Boston teams started winning everything that I wanted to be a contrarian about it, you know what I mean? Because it would have been easy for me to just, like, get behind my group of friends, throw on a Red Sox jersey, and just look around and be like, I was here the whole time.
Yeah. You'd be the pink hat. That's what they call the Johnny Come Latelys, the pink hat.
Yeah. And so I just kind of, when you grow up being from somewhere else and you're friends with a bunch of Boston people and on social media every time they're in the playoffs, it's like all of a sudden everybody comes out and starts tweeting and posting on Facebook about the Red Sox, the Bruins, or the Celtics. And it's like, you didn't say anything like all year. And now it's like, and especially I think it was because of, you know, being a high schooler, that was even more so the case because everybody would just kind of jump on whatever playoff team was having a hot run at that point. But I think being a Philadelphia sports fan has built character on me.
Yes.
It's definitely had its lows, I will say that. But it's also had like some high points. And an obvious example of that was the 2018 Super Bowl. So I was.
What was that like for you at the office?
Oh, yeah. When the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I was watching in a room filled with Patriots fans.
Okay.
So I was in college in a room full of Patriots fans, and it was an apartment building, so there were people above us, like, banging on the floor every time the Patriots scored, and I was pretty much the only Eagles fan there. And so when Tom Brady fumbled that last ball, I went crazy. And so at my school, there's this globe that we have, like this big globe sculpture in the center of the campus. And every time a Boston sports team wins a title, people will come out of the buildings, go to that, and just start like throwing a party. Like people will go crazy. It's like some weird tradition at this school.
But is that Eagles, Westfield State?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's a really weird thing. But when the Eagles won, I ran out there, and I was the only person out there at the globe celebrating, and it was actually kind of hilarious because my friend like went with me just to like see if anybody else was there, and I was the only one. So that was like the one moment when I was a Philadelphia sports fan that I had like something kind of decent going for me.
Did you put on the gray sweatpants and sweatshirt and just start dancing to Rocky in front of the globe on your own?
I should have. If they win another title, I'll go back there and do that.
Brady the Bunch Podcast, 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. We're talking with Devin Bates from Local 22, Local 44 News. If you want to be on the podcast, you can. Brady at 101.3 The Game is how you can email me. And again, subscribe to us. Give us a five-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker. You guys are in a unique position at 22-44. Let me see here. ABC is the 22, Fox is the 44. Mm-hmm. So ABC is the 11 o'clock news. Fox is the 10 o'clock news.
Yep.
Do you ever, when you do the, I'm trying to think how to say this, because you do the same story, do you have to do it twice with two different endings, one for the 10 o'clock news, yep, and one for the 11 o'clock news? So like if you're downtown Burlington on Church Street, Devin Bates reporting from Church Street for 22, Local 22 News or Local 44, do you have to do two different endings?
So if it's one of those stories where we call it a package, so like, you know, you do the voice track and everything over it, then you'll have to record two different tags at the end. So it'll be like, you know, Devin Bates in Burlington, Devin Bates Local 22. And then you have to record one that says Local 44. And you just put both of the files on the computer for the morning crew to be able to get it. And that took me a little bit to understand when I first got there, because I was like, wait, so you mean we're like ABC and Fox?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's something that we have to do. And it is kind of a weird situation because it does add a little bit of work to your day. But it's definitely interesting.
How irritating is it when sports gets in the way of you going on the air at a good time? Because, and what I mean by that is, like, when the Red Sox play a 3 o'clock game or a 2 o'clock game, we pretty much bank it as, well, the Red Sox are going to play from 2 till 5. There's a 20-minute post game show. We're going to get on the air at 5:30. Well, maybe the game goes a little bit quicker. Maybe the game goes longer. But no matter what happens, like, we can't be on past 6. So maybe we'll be on for 20 minutes. Maybe we'll be on for 40 minutes. Maybe we won't be on at all. But we know we can't be on past 6. I was watching just the other night, Rockets and Warriors, they go to overtime. I'm like, well, that pushed back the news 20 minutes now, and you guys have to stay there. How frustrating is that when sports gets in the way?
So a perfect example of this was the World Series when that game.
Oh, my God, yes, Red Sox Dodgers.
I forget exactly how many innings that went.
18, I think.
But I can't take full credit for having to stay, because as a reporter, at 11:30, if my story is done and it's ready to air later on, I don't need to be there to sort of present it. It can just air without me being there.
Okay.
Because it's already kind of mostly pre-recorded. So I got to go home a little bit earlier that night. I left at about midnight, and I kind of got back and watched this game. And, you know, as it really started dragging out, it started going into the 13th and 14th inning. I was texting people from work and just saying, I feel so bad for all of you right now. And that is, I think they ended up being there until something like 3 a.m. And Lauren said that when she was driving home, some of like the bagel shops in the area were starting to like open up for the day.
And what's crazy is that, what's the earliest news? That was a weekend, I think. What's the earliest news on the weekend?
The earliest news on the weekend, I believe, is at 6 o'clock.
So you're going to go on at 4, and like, come on, we could just cancel the news and then we'll just play the new news at 6 o'clock.
It almost does seem silly when you're on at like somewhere like 3 a.m. after a Red Sox game. And when, you know, with the Red Sox, there were probably actually a good amount of people watching because all the Red Sox fans in the area were tuning in to see the end of that game. But it's almost like when you're on like a local TV station at like 2 a.m, it's a surreal feeling. It's really strange.
Well, you've lucked out in the fact that NBC has Sunday Night Football, so you don't have to deal with Sunday Night Football. ABC no longer has Monday Night Football because it's ESPN, so you don't have to deal with Monday Night Football. So I feel like the times you're impacted is a lot less maybe than some other stations.
You know what we had to get delayed for, and it was kind of hilarious over the summer. It was I'm almost blanking on the name of the league, but it's all those old retired NBA guys. The Big Three.
Oh, yeah, the Big Three.
Yeah. So
is on Fox.
Yeah. So we would get delayed for that, and that was kind of hilarious because there were some of those games where it was just like almost atrocious to watch it. Like, I like some elements of that league, but then watching these like old guys just kind of hook up threes and they're airballing all the time, and it's like, come on, can you guys just end this thing so we can go home? And it's like, you're almost like at the mercy of like these retired NBA players, and for however long they want to drag out the game, because there's not even a clock on that game. I think it's you have to win by a certain amount of points. So sometimes it would just kind of keep going for a while, and you're like, come on, can you just like stop right now?
Would you rather work the late shift, like you work 3 to midnight now, would you rather work that shift, or would you rather work the morning news where it's probably 3 a.m. to noonish.
See, I think I would have a hard time getting up that early. And obviously, I would be able to do it. I would have to adjust. But I just can't see myself waking up at like 2:30 or 3 in the morning. That just, I mean, I've had to do it for random stuff in my life before. Everybody has. But to be able to do that every day, I think is actually a true skill, because there is like nothing that feels normal about waking up at 3 in the morning. Like, even, you know, it's just not a time where you should be awake. I don't want anybody to have to be awake at 3 in the morning. But and then the other thing, too, is like if you're on that schedule and the weekend rolls around, it's much less convenient than being in my schedule, because, you know, if
you're already ready to party it up because you're up till midnight.
Like, that's the thing. Like my girlfriend, sometimes she'll get tired at like 12, 1. And then sometimes I'm just like sitting up, like, I have like at least 2 or 3 more hours before I'm ready to sleep right now. So like it's fun, though, because it does make me a little bit more on a normal schedule until I have to get up early for something. And then that's a different story. But I feel like I would prefer that to Friday night coming around and I am just too drained to do anything.
If you are someone who goes to bed at 8 o'clock, I just feel like you're missing everything. You know, you go to bed at 8, you've missed the game, you've missed the State of the Union, you've missed the election results.
Yeah.
Like, you've missed those things.
That's when things are happening, prime time. You got to be up, yeah.
So you've missed those things, and then you're playing catch up when you wake up at 2 in the morning. Like, okay, so who won the election?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know. And you're not up for Game of Thrones if you go to sleep that early.
Yeah.
Are you a Game of Thrones person?
No, and I feel like I'm missing out, you know, especially these last few weeks, because everything on Twitter right now is just all Game of Thrones. Like, there's these very specific Game of Thrones jokes, and I can't tell you how frustrating it is to just see them and not be able to relate to them at all.
Game of Thrones and Avengers, I don't watch either of them, so between those two, I just feel so out of the loop. If it wasn't for sports, I'd have nothing to talk about with anybody.
Yeah, you're like, oh, Thanos killed the Night King.
Your guess is as good as mine,
true
or not.
It's weird, because it's very rare that there's a series or a movie like that that could just kind of dominate everybody's conversations for like weeks. And the last show that I can really think did that was like Breaking Bad or something like that. Like
one I didn't watch.
Yeah. I watched that, so I can take credit for that. That was good, and I'm glad I did that. But yeah, some of these shows, it's like they will just, everybody is watching them, and it's almost like if you're not, you're missing out on something. It's like all your friends have like an inside joke that you don't know anything about.
Devin, so I always ask the co-host or the guest to ask me 3 questions. So what do you got?
So I'm kind of curious how you ended up, and I'm sure you probably answered this on a podcast before, just how you sort of got into radio and sort of that path and how you felt along the way as you were getting towards where you are now.
Yeah, I have talked about this. I did it in the episode with Sean Parker. I know that off the top of my head, I think, which was episode 2. Hard to believe. That was back almost 2.5 months ago. So people can find kind of the full version is there, but I definitely backed into the business 100%. I thought I was going to be a play-by-play guy for a really long time. And then once college was about to end, it's like April of senior year, I'm like, people don't leave those jobs very often. I'm like, people only leave those jobs for age, and you got to catch it at the right time. Like, people don't just leave those jobs willingly very often. Then I was like, well, you got to travel a lot. What if I have a family? Am I ever going to be around? You know, you're living out of a suitcase. So it's like, what do I do now? So I went into sports information, which is basically PR for an athletic department. So I worked at Norwich. So that's how I got to Vermont the first time. And I worked there for a year. And I also coached baseball there. I did it as a volunteer. I quickly realized that coaching baseball in a volunteer capacity, I enjoyed that more than the job itself. And part of it was because I love baseball. I played college baseball. And the other part of it was I was 22. I couldn't stand being at games and not being a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked if I could volunteer. It quickly got to the point where, and not for better, I kind of let the volunteer job overrun my real job. And so they didn't want me back the next year. They said, you know, they said, you can come back for this internship, which was a paid internship. It was a good internship. They said, you can come back if you don't coach baseball. And I told them that's fine, but I don't think I really would have been fine with that. And they said, basically, we don't believe that you would do that. So they didn't bring me back, which was fine. So I went to Pennsylvania towards Scranton, worked at a small Division III college, did the same thing, did sports information, volunteered with baseball. Ended up leaving midway through the school year, like in January. And I took a job coaching a junior college baseball team for $1,500 a year. Not a month, $1,500 a year. And my parents are like, look, we're fine with you coming back home to live in our basement, but you need a media job because that's what you went to school for, too. So I did that. I emailed the newspaper. I emailed the TV stations. I emailed the radio. The radio guys got back to me. They were the only ones who had room for me. They said, if you know how to run the board, we can hire you tomorrow. I said, I don't know how to run the board. They said, okay, then we can't hire you. They called me in 2 months and said, we got something for you. So I worked from 6 to 10 a.m., basically started out pressing one button, and I was kind of accelerating in both careers. I was doing really well baseball coaching. I was coaching in the summer. I had really good teams. I was coaching junior college, was really recruiting well. We were playing well, and I was working my way up at the station too. And then it got to a point where the baseball job that I was leaning towards, and I was applying for jobs to be a college baseball coach full-time, I ended up getting screwed, stabbed in the back by somebody that I trusted, and it kind of just knocked me out of that, and then this one took off. So I definitely backed into it. It's not something I anticipated, but you know, now looking back, I wouldn't have it any other way.
And isn't it strange how that always works, too? I mean, people, it seems like there's never like a clear upward mobility with how they want their career to go, where they're going. It's always like you end up kind of bumping into something. Something leads you in another direction. But being in radio, I'm sure, like you said, you've got to cover a lot of cool things. And this is where I'm more comfortable, almost like being the one interviewing somebody. Like it was cool being asked questions, because that's like usually people, like when I'm interviewing, they're obviously not going to turn around and ask me stuff. So this is cool having this scripts flipped a little bit. But when it comes to the last, you know, 5-6 years, I guess you can go back even further than that. What were some of the most emotional sports moments that you watched? Like when you think about just moments that can make a grown man almost in tears, and they happen in a lot of different sports, and I think, you know, some of them are wins or stuff like that. What is something that stands out to you as a moment that was just really emotional?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, as a fan, you know, I got to see the Seahawks win the Super Bowl in 2013. That's my favorite team. So for me personally, as a fan, that had me emotional. Seeing my dad, I went to the World Series back in 05, game one. I'm not a White Sox fan. My dad is. Mm-hmm. So White Sox have been bad forever. Got into the playoffs sometimes and choked and then been bad again. So I got to go to game one of the World Series with him, and they won. And then they ended up sweeping the series against Houston. I got to see him cry tears of happiness. So that was fun and emotional, something I'll always remember. As someone who's in the business, something that's been emotional that I've gotten to cover, nothing stands out. I just enjoy hearing good stories. And you hear the stories of people that have overcome things, people that I have to go back kind of through my own archives in my mind here and try to think about some of those stories and what they are. But, you know, when you hear about, this one is less about sports, is more human interest, I guess, more features. But there's a woman who's going to come on the podcast this week also, I think. Her name is Val Pallotta, and her son Josh was a local athlete in the area, played lacrosse at Colchester, helped start the varsity lacrosse program there. Well, he went and served overseas in Afghanistan, came back, committed suicide through post-traumatic stress, and now she is on a one-woman crusade to end post-traumatic stress and veteran suicide. And I've gotten to help her promote her. She does a hockey tournament, which is coming up, ironically, this weekend on Mother's Day weekend, which helps promote, you know, money and awareness for veteran suicide and PTSD. And she's trying to open up essentially a veteran community center where veterans can go and hang out. And I think, you know, they already have that in the form of American Legions and things, but she's trying to make this unique to Vermont and have things on site, you know, video games and aromatherapy and massages and counselors, things like that. So getting a chance to speak with her and learn her story, that's been something that I've enjoyed, in quotes, because there's so much pain and trauma behind it. But I've hearing stories like that helps you give a lot of perspective.
Mm-hmm. And there is nothing I love more than somebody who is willing to dedicate that much time to a cause that's really deeply personal to them. And you run into that a lot, not in just sports, but in news too. Somebody who really is deeply affected by something like that, but then channels that into something to try to make change. And so, you know, I can't get enough of hearing about people like that. And there's a lot of them up in this area too.
There's a lot of people who are charitable, a lot of people who have been touched negatively by something and are looking to to help be the good on the other side of it. So they are uplifting. There's been plenty of good stories that I've heard, maybe none more powerful than that. That the Super Bowl that I went to in Houston, I got a chance to talk with Nate Boyer, who's a former, he played for the Seahawks in the preseason. He played at the University of Texas, but he was a long snapper for Texas and then with the Seahawks in the preseason. He is a Green Beret, and he went and served in the Sudan, I believe. And to hear him come back and then to talk with him in the same year that we had the Colin Kaepernick kneeling situation in the NFL, to hear a veteran who had played in the NFL, because you don't get many of them, hear a veteran who was part of the NFL community give his perspective on and talk about what he's seen, what he's been through. And what people don't realize is that the reason why Colin Kaepernick kneels is because Nate Boyer and him met and came to that agreement. Because Kaepernick originally was going to sit right entirely for the anthem. And Boyer and him caught wind of it, or Boyer caught wind of it, and they met. And Boyer went and presented, hey, here's how veterans will feel about this. Here is what we went through. Here is what's gone on in the veteran community. They came to an agreement where he was going to kneel because it was halfway between standing and sitting. Mm-hmm. And so that was a veteran who helped bring that, you know, or helped come to that compromise and agreement. Whether you like it or not, that's how it was born. So to hear Nate Boyer talk about that meeting with Colin Kaepernick was pretty pretty insightful also.
Yeah, and there were a lot of veterans who kind of came out at that time. And, you know, there was people on both sides of the issue, obviously. But I think what Nate Boyer said is how there was a population of people that felt that way, that it was more respectful than sitting down.
Yes.
And yeah, I think being able to talk to people like that one-on-one and kind of pick their brain about what they think about certain things is really interesting to me.
So you have a third question?
My third question, and this is another one you've probably gotten, what is it, what was your first impressions of working with Arnie, with somebody, and this is like coming from a place where when I was in college, we had this you know, sports talk radio show that we would do every like Tuesday, and I one of my friends almost reminds me of a mini Arnie, because he would always have the hot takes. He would come in, he would be the one leading us into the show yelling. And so I've kind of been like sort of the more subdued, laid back person in a group of people where one of them is kind of brings the energy to the show in a way. So what's it like to kind of be balance all of that?
I mean, the show works because it is balanced, and the show works because Arnie's going to bring energy. He's going to bring, I don't know if it's hot takes, but he's going to bring opinion. He's going to bring strong opinion and strong personality into it. He's going to get you to react. I can balance it. I like to think with logic in a lot of ways. So the certain things, you know, when he gets going, I can counteract them and bring something that's more truthful to the situation, you know, or less emotional rather, and more truthful, more logical. But also he can rile me up and we can get going back and forth. And Rich is there because he's, you know, Rich is a good calming presence. He has a good even keeled nature about him, but he also brings the emotional fan perspective. So we each have things that'll draw emotion out of us. The show works because of the three distinct personalities. You know, if all three of us were yelling hotheads, it wouldn't be good. If all three of us were really, really chill, it wouldn't be good either.
Right.
My first impression of Arnie was that, and this guy gets it. Like, this guy gets the business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I understand that when he's going to go off and get all heated, well, then that's not the time for me to get heated necessarily, or at least for very long. Like, we can have 2 to 3 minute stretches where we're both arguing and yelling and it's entertaining. But if he's going to do that, then me and Rich have to be balanced more down here.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets it. Like, he knows what's going to cause a reaction. And trust me, he believes what he says. Like, he's not just making things up, but he knows exactly what to say in a way that's going to get you to react. Whether you're going to agree or not agree, he's going to get you to react. So my thought was, like, the debate format, like, didn't really come about until about 15 years ago when Around the Horn and PTI really started.
Yeah.
But I think Arnie was doing that before it was fashionable to be doing that. So I think there was a lot to learn there.
Mm-hmm. And it really is almost like an art form to try to find that balance of, you know, like you said, if you were all just kind of yelling over each other, people would just kind of turn down the radio and be like, I don't need to listen to this. Like, this isn't fun to listen to. But I think, yeah, having that energy balance where you can kind of joke around, and then I think some of what Arnie says sometimes sets up for a good debate too, and a good conversation, because, you know, it's like he'll make some sort of claim, and then you're I forget what you were talking about last week, but there was, I always listen, and every now and then he'll just say something that either you or Rich will just, I can almost picture you like leaning back in your seat like, what?
Well, that's when we play our drop where we've got the Arnie, did you really just say that, or things like that. That was another outlandish comment by Arnie Spanier, you know, or I just tell people, that's Arnie at 1013thegame.com, like for people who disagree. But no, Arnie, there's been a lot to learn from Rich also, but and I think the show works because of the distinct voices on it and the distinct personalities. So, Devin, any last things for me?
I would just say thank you for having me on. It's been great. I will, you know, I love listening to 101.3. I'll probably actually be listening to you guys this afternoon.
We hope so. That's the goal always. Hey,
yeah.
Speaking of that, do you see, maybe you're too young in your career, but do you see the other stations as your rivals?
I guess in a sense that they are also in the same business and we're in the same area, yeah. But I mean, I'm friends with some of the people at the other stations, and it's never really too much like a rivalry per se. But you are kind of always wondering. So say all three stations are covering one story. Sometimes it's interesting to see, you know, like what was their take on it, like look at how they presented it, and then kind of see, you know, what did they hit on that maybe I missed, so that next time I can think about. Sort of things like that. But yeah, it is interesting to kind of stack yourself up to the competition per se.
One more thought on your what have I done that's emotional. Being at the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament, that is something that's very emotional, and it always is. And I've been there now. I've been a part of the tournament twice. I've been here for three of them, but I've been a part of it twice. That is something that's very, very emotional. And I'm sure you'll be there this year, I'm sure, to see it firsthand. So, Devin, I appreciate it, man, and you've got to get to work. I'll be watching you on the news later tonight.
All right. Thank you. My pleasure.